she would, you know, go from the village over these hills and everything else like this, right, and finally come to where the woodcutters were. And they would tie up some, she'd, you know, bargain, hassle for, what's the word, haggle, you know, something, for some wood, for some cut little wood. And they'd tie it in her cloth and lift it under her head. And she'd walk back to the village to get someone to help her, put it down, open it up, and sit there and, you know, and barter all day with the housewives for some wood and some money like that for the wood. And that was just kind of surviving. But so she was always lamenting how miserable her life was and everything else. And so one day she's coming back from the wood lot and the knot came undone. And it all fell on the ground. And there was no way she could put it back up by herself. So she started scratching the ground and crying, "Narayana, Narayana, Narayana." So the Narayana appeared in front of her like that. And he said, "Old lady, what do you want?" And she said, "Put all the wood back on my head." Yeah. And he said, "Are you sure that's what you want?" She said, "Yes, please." He said, "Okay, all right, you know, here it is." You know? So, you know, we have to have some idea of what to ask for, right? There's some higher idea. Brahmande brahmate kom bhagyavan jeev, guru krishna prasade pori bhakti lada bij. By the mercy of Guru and Krishna, we get to see this experience like that, you know? Somebody gives you, Jack and the Beanstalk, Western story, right? You got the magic beans. So, you know, or if you're in a country where there's no mangoes, you have a mango seed, you think, oh, I could, yeah. I could become very rich. My children will be very rich, you know, selling mangoes. Yeah? Or whatever it is. So the seed is very rare. You know? Ramandi Bhamati Kom Bhagya Bhanji Guru Krishna Prasade Paya Bhakti Ladavis. So Balaji, yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah, it's one of the most richest deities in the world. Yeah, more wealth than the Vatican, I think, almost. Yeah, yeah. Because everybody's coming and giving jewelry and everything else. I don't know how many. It's like 18 people or something popping the jewels out of the diamond rings and stuff and putting them in different, you know, rubies, diamonds, emeralds, silver, gold, like that. Yeah. Yeah. And some kind of silver dress on here in this picture, like that. There's so many beautiful things. And so on top of the hill, when you're up on top of the hill like that, you feel like you're just, you know, in the spiritual world. It's just like, there's just stairs coming down with people talking, different pundits giving discourses, and people there. It's just, you know, so many people. It's incredible. And we actually stayed up on the hill, in a little bungalow like that. It was after a rain, after the hurricane too, so everything was just full of water flowing like that. It's very wonderful. You know? Get some idea of what real happiness is, right? You know? Because here they have a different idea in the West. I mean, whitewater rafting is as close as you can come to heaven around here, you know? Like that. Yeah. Jai, Balaji ki. So we're preparing for this. It's in Metering Long. In South America, we have a very nice program down there in South America. Trying to do. Lord Chaitanya says, Bharate bhumite hoile. Manusha janmayar, janma sartika kara parakara upakar. Come more close. Aura pas, aura he. Is that correct? Aura pas, aura he. Yeah. Don't worry. Again, you're vegetarians. Yeah. Bharate bhumite hoile, manusha janmayar, sartika parakara parakara upakar. Anybody who's taken birth in Bharat, India, as a human being, you know, should make his own life perfect by taking advantage of all this culture. You know? If you look in the Encyclopedia Britannica, it talks about Germany, the geography, the economy, and the literature. Okay, you look under England, the same thing, literature. You look under, you know, China, like the literature. When you come to India, it's the only country I've seen like that. It talks about the geography, the economy, the history. But it doesn't talk about the literature of India. It talks about the philosophy of India. And there's a whole section in Karma Mimamsa and all the different philosophical schools like that, the Vedanta and also Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, like that. So India is, you know, the only country in the world where it considers that the philosophy of India is its real opulence, wealth. Yeah? So if you take birth in India as a human being, then make your life perfect. Take advantage of all this culture, right? You become a philosopher, right? Yeah. And so, and then para upakara, then you help other people, right? That's what Indians should do. They should go abroad, you know, giving philosophical culture like that. You know, not trying to go abroad taking software engineering jobs, you know, like that. Yeah. You know, Prabhupada said I didn't come to America to take anything. I came to give something like that. You know, what the people don't have, you know, philosophical perspective. The example is given that the Western countries, you know, like a very robust, healthy, big fellow like that, but some are other myopic, very short-sighted, you know, can't see, like, can barely see who that is. Native? Yeah. Like that, you know? Oh, yeah, you know? Yeah. And then Asia is like some fellow, maybe like, you know, some problem with the leg, he can't walk very well, but very far-sighted. You know, very old culture, very wise. You know? So they want to cross over the mountains, but the pathway is a little bit rough in some places, and so, you know, neither one can do it because one guy can't see far enough, other guy can't walk. So what do?
Piggyback.
Yeah. The big stout guy puts the other guy on his shoulders and he says, go left here, go right. And they go, no problem. So Papa says, this is, you know, India's position. It's like not meant to have like material development, not the place for material development. If you want to be a mechanic, you take birth in Germany. If you want to be a lover, take birth in France. Want to be a cook?
Italy.
Yeah. Yeah. You want to be a mystic yogi, right? Okay. Want to be a kung fu expert? So everybody, it's a fact, every culture is karma, you know, for people like that. Yeah. And so, you know, take advantage of the culture, become perfect and help others. So we're trying to do this ourselves, having taken birth in an Indian family now, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, and then trying to help other people with this knowledge. The people are really suffering. If you actually just, you know, start looking at the paper and reading things, you see God is, we're quite fortunate. If you have what it is where something like, if you go to bed, you know, without being hungry, you're in a minority of people on the earth like that. And sometimes these displacements and what they call the ethnic disputes is just unbelievable. You know, people killing each other, you know, beyond belief. Just unbelievable, massacring each other like that. Going on the whole world, you know. And so, because people are just confused, you know, like that. And most people don't, like, you know, cut their finger off. Like, okay, you know, I've got a problem, okay. You know, it's not going to, you know, realize it's not going to help, right? You know, well, okay, that didn't help. I'll chop my whole hand off. That might make it better, you know. Yeah. So, it says it here, the introduction to Srimad Bhagavatam. This is, okay, we'll use this. My God, this has been bathed. Some kind of shnan program for the book. Okay. So, preface. It doesn't give a date here, but Prabhupada wrote this before he left India. And so the first, probably the first canto was finished when he wrote this, you know. But the second canto, I don't know if he even started on that before he left. Okay. Now what's the very first? This preface is very short. It's just like you see, just like, you know, one page, two pages. But it's very, very concentrated. And probably, okay, what do we expect to find in the preface? There's Hemingway. What's in the preface of a book? Came from Schenectady. Came from Boston. Yeah. What else? Writer's Guide to Literature. She's getting her PhD in literature, right? Yeah. Okay. One time, a Reader's Guide to Literature, explaining. Here, come. Sorry, come closer here. You know, fill up a space in the middle here. Yeah. So using the preface of a book, and most books have prefaces. You know, why is it there? Why do they waste their time? The preface will tell you why the book was written. Right? So that's a good thing to know. The qualifications of the author. Right? The qualifications that are expected of the reader. What else? Why it was written. And under what circumstances it was written. Like that. So somebody might say, my name is Martin Mudge, and I work for the Mudge Central High School. Right? And I discovered there were no good books on calculus for high school students, like that. You know? And so my students and my fellow teachers in you know, in the spring of 2005, you know, wrote this book. It's expected the student has already completed trigonometry and analytical geometry before starting this book. Thank you. Right? Yeah. So that's the preface. It tells you why, that what's the purpose of the book, the qualifications like that. So see now, that's also here. It's important. Yeah? Okay, what's the first word? Give me the first word. We. Not you. Not me. We. Okay. We must know. What must we know? The present need of human society. Okay. And what is that need? Oh, yeah, I guess I said. And what is that need? Huh? Human society is no longer bounded by geographical limits to particular countries or communities. This is a fact. I was talking about this today. The Red Chinese have their intermediate range, you know, nuclear missiles sitting up on the Tibetan plateau, overlooking China, which turns them into long range, you know, nuclear missiles. So you're not bounded by geographic limits. Human society is broader than in the Middle Ages, and the world tendency is toward one state or one human society. The ideals of spiritual communism, according to Srimad Bhagavatam, are based more or less on the oneness of the entire human society, nay, of the entire energy of all living beings. So Prabhupada's including animals right away too, plants, bacteria. The need is felt by great thinkers to make this a successful ideology. So what is this? Appreciating the, what does it say here? The oneness of all human beings, all living entities. Srimad Bhagavatam will fill this need in human society. It begins therefore with an aphorism of Vedanta Sutra, Vedanta philosophy. Janmari asya yataha, to establish the idea of a common cause. Human society at the present moment is no longer in the darkness of oblivion. It has made rapid progress in the fields of material comforts, education, and economic development throughout the entire world. But there is a pinprick somewhere in the social body at large, and therefore there are large-scale quarrels, even over less important issues. There is need of a clue as to how humanity can become one in peace, friendship, and prosperity with a common cause. So I quote that a lot. It's a nice thing. What's your goal? To become one in peace, friendship, and prosperity with a common cause. Srimad Bhagavatam will fill this need, for it is a cultural presentation for the re-spiritualization of the entire human society. Right? Cultural presentation for the re-spiritualization of the entire human society. Srimad Bhagavatam should be introduced also in the schools and colleges. Yeah? For it is recommended by the great devotee student Prahlad Maharaj in order to change the demoniac face of society. Komara achare pragana dharman bhagavata iha durlabham manusham janma tadapi adruvam artadam. Bhagavatam 7.6.1. Disparity in human society is due to a lack of principles in a godless civilization. There is God, or the Almighty One, from whom everything emanates, by whom everything is maintained, and whom everything is merged to rest. Material science has tried to find the ultimate source of creation very insufficiently. But it is a fact, and there is one ultimate source of everything that be. Yeah? This ultimate source is explained rationally and authoritatively in the beautiful Bhagavatam. Oh, here we are. Speak of the devil. Yeah. Srimad Bhagavatam is a transcendental science, not only for knowing the ultimate source of everything, but also for knowing our relation with Him and our duty toward perfection of human society on the basis of His perfect knowledge. So right from the very beginning, Srimad Bhagavatam is a whole very social, you know, experience. You know, many books are talking about, you know, actually my first temple president, Bhaktadas, he was a Marxist who was in the university in San Diego, California. And he met one devotee, and he was arguing with this devotee and thinking, I'll defeat this spiritual guy. You know, I was rational Marxist philosophy. The devotee would defeat him again and again. It's after five or six times, and he began to think, God, if I'm an honest guy, I should admit, you know, defeat and just take his book and look at it, you know. So he said he bought one of Prabhupada's books, and he was reading it, you know. And he kept reading it, and something was bothering him. He was reading and reading it. You know? And then, because he said he read many books on yoga, many books on philosophies about these kind of things and Marxism, you know. And they said, you have to do this austerity, you have to sacrifice for the people, you got to do this and that, this and that, this and that. And then you enjoy, you know. So he kept on reading Prabhupada's books and all these austerities for Krishna and sacrificing for Krishna and not eating meat, fish, or eggs and sacrificing your sexual relations for Krishna and sacrificing, you know, the football scores and, you know, sports activities, you know, for Krishna. And he just kept looking, well, hey, well, when do we enjoy? It's like, you know, and he finished the book and he came to realize, there he is, Chandra. No, and he came to realize that there was no place you were going to enjoy in this philosophy. And it actually kind of convinced him that it was actually real, you know. A whole different view like that, you know. So, what was I saying here? Yeah. Srimad Bhagavatam, yeah, so the whole process is very, very social right from the beginning. Because most of these books are aimed at you will get this, you will get this, you will get this, you will get this. But Prabhupada is saying from the very beginning, it's we, right? It's not for an isolated, egoistic, meditational process, you know? Or a self-improvement book where you become better to strike off your rivals, you know, like that, you know? One of the biggest things in the modern world is secret pleasures, you know, in terms of drugs or your headphones, like that. It's just private pleasures, private enjoyment, like that. You know? Prabhupada says people used to be concerned about how to enjoy with their families. They said, but now they're not even concerned with that. It's all this personal, private enjoyment. And if the family relation doesn't facilitate that, then, you know, they don't care for the family. Right? Yeah. So beyond that, he's talking about establishing unity between all living beings, right? Yeah. So you can look anybody in the eyes and, you know, and they can see, well, this guy's my friend. You know? We're talking about earlier, somebody may come to the conclusion, to solve my problem, I'm going to chop off my finger. That didn't work, so I'll chop off my hand. Right? Or even better. No. Because then you realize that genocide, you know, the Czechs against the Slovaks, right? Or something like this, or all these horrible things that have happened, you know? But it's just, you realize, it's just, no, it's not going to solve the problem. Right? You know, killing this person is the same as killing myself. And you realize that. We're disconnected. You know, what's happening to the frogs? The frog population in the world?
They're being used at schools for that the kids can practice the second.
That's happening partly, but also just being annihilated by pesticides. You know, the frogs, the bees, the bats. You know, I forgot what it is, like 95% of all the bats are dead. You know? Since the first Europeans came to the U.S., something like it was like 80% of all the trees have been cut down, you know, like that. And so after a while you begin to realize, well, hey, you know, this is going to have some effect on us, you know. Because the frogs are in between the water and the land. That's how the flow of the ecosystem goes like that. And farmers now are so, panicked that they're hiring people. Several devotees they raise bees, they have beehives. And it's very good business. So farmers pay them to bring their hives and put them in their fields during the time when they need to be fertilized, pollinated, like that. So maybe we're beginning to realize, you know, that we're all connected, right? You know, we're all interconnected. And Prabhupada says the purpose of the Bhagavatam is to rationally, this ultimate source is explained rationally and authoritatively in the beautiful Bhagavatam. Or Srimad Bhagavatam. Yeah? Yeah. Srimad Bhagavatam is a transcendental science not only for knowing the ultimate source of everything, but also for knowing our relation with Him and our duty toward perfection of our false ego, no, of human society on the basis of perfect knowledge. It is powerful reading matter in the Sanskrit language, and it is now rendered into English. Elaborately, so that simply by a careful reading, one will know God perfectly. so much so that the reader will be sufficiently educated to defend himself from the onslaught of atheists. Okay? Atheists are coming to in an onslaught. And so you'll be sufficiently educated to defend yourself against them. I was standing on the platform waiting for the BART, Bay Area Rapid Transit train one time. One Indian guy was like this. One Indian guy walked up and said, "You are chanting names of God, but you are wearing plastic shoes." Man-made shoes, like that, or something like that, you know. So, you know, that's why there is no God. We replace God with this technology and knowledge. You know, we don't need these things anymore, you know. So I was thinking, he probably talks about this. He said, "Well, yeah, but you take some brain to manufacture all these plastics and things like that." He said, "Yes." You know? And he said, "But where did the brain come from? You know, where did the intelligence come from?" And I think, "Well, we invented that also." So, yeah. Or in the future we will do that, right? You know, here's my post-dated check for $1 million. Give me your house. Like that. In the future I will pay for your house. But as Baba's saying, science is saying, in the future you won't die. They, maybe about 8 years ago, there was the first nuclear reactor, atomic reactor, that had been put into service to produce commercial electricity. You know, it was decommissioned. It was Ann Arbor, Michigan. And it had performed exactly like they expected it to, a number of years before it had to shut it down, decommission it. And so when they were decommissioning it, the press was reading with a little bit of sarcastic humor the inauguration speech. And then the people said, you know, "The inauguration of this atomic reactor to produce commercial electric energy is a significant point in the history of the evolution of our human race, because this marks the point from which electricity will become so cheap that nobody will bother to charge you for it." Pay your electric bill recently? Yeah. So it hasn't happened like that. Yeah. And how many years till people will be on the moon, you know, existing with hydroponic gardens and, you know, all these things like that. Science is promising so many things. And I forgot this. But one devotee, Daro Krishna, he's Argentinian, he reminded me. When I was about, this was in high school, so maybe like about 16, 17 years old, that was when all these promises of science and everything else were so, you know, just unbelievable, you know, elevated. And so at that time, the thing was that science was just about to discover, right, how to make us immortal, you know. And if not immortal, at least we would live for 700 years, 800 years, and then we'd figure out, how to become immortal. And we were all lamenting for the old people, because see, they just missed out. Oh, so unfortunate, you know. If they lived like maybe 10 more years like the rest of us, they also would have become immortal like the rest of us, you know. But actually it was a fact. That was, people were actually thinking like that, you know. But then, you know, we're becoming immortal, we're going to find faster than light transportation with Buck Rogers or with a Doc Smith, all these kind of strange things, you know. So, you know, where is it here? So much so that the reader will be sufficiently educated to defend himself from the onslaught of atheists. Over and above this, the reader will be able to convert others to accepting God as a concrete principle. Right? That's pretty solid. You know? Srimad Bhagavatam begins with the definition of the ultimate source. It is a bona fide commentary on the Vedanta Sutra by the same author, Srila Vyasadeva, and gradually it develops into 9 cantos, up to the highest state of God realization. The only qualification one needs to study this great book of transcendental knowledge is to proceed step by step, cautiously, and not jump forward haphazardly, as with an ordinary book. It should be gone through chapter by chapter, one after another. The reading matter is so arranged with the original Sanskrit text, its English transliteration, synonyms, translation and purports, so that one is sure to become a God-realized soul at the end of finishing the first 9 cantos. The 10th canto is distinct from the first 9 because it deals directly with the transcendental activities of the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. One will be unable to capture the effects of the 10th canto without going through the first 9 cantos. The book is complete in 12 cantos, each independent, but it is good for all to read them in small installments, one after another. I must admit my frailties in presenting Srimad Bhagavatam, but still I am hopeful for its good reception by thinkers and leaders of society on the strength of the following statement of Srimad Bhagavatam, 1.5.11. Tad bhagvishargo janat haga viplavo yasmin pratishlokam abaddavati api namani anantasya yaksho nikani cha nikani yach trinvanti gayanti grananti sarvahan. On the other hand, that literature which is full of descriptions of the transcendental glories of the name, fame, form, and pastimes of the unlimited Lord is a transcendental creation meant for bringing about a revolution in the impious lives of a misdirected civilization. Such transcendental literature, even though irregularly composed, is heard, sung, and accepted by purified men who are thoroughly honest. Oh. It's ghee. Yeah. Yeah. So, Om Tat Sat, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. So, Prabhupada ghee. Yeah. So in South America, we have this festival. You know, it's going to be August 16th, Jamastami starting. And then we are discussing before at Srihari's ashram that we start off on Jamastami in the noontime with a program at La Cantuta, which is right across the highway from our temple down in the valley. Our temple is about 45 minutes from Lima, the big capital there. And it's up in a sunny area where there's sports clubs and swimming and horseback riding. You hear the skeet shooting going off like that, you know. And the town there is actually small, like, you know, kind of resort type town with fruits and restaurants and very pleasant, you know. It's a very beautiful temple there, and the ashrams and everything else. And so the program at noontime with La Cantuta, it's a national education school, University of National Education. I've been there many times before, and they're very pleased with us, very happy about our ideas. So first we're going to present one verse from the Light of the Bhagavat, where Prabhupada talks about that the educators, the intelligent class of people, are not meant to, you know, take up the responsibility of government, nor take up the responsibility of money, these kind of things. But they're supposed to inspire these people to use their money and use their power to organize sacrifice, you know, for spiritual realization, like that. We're discussing, we had a program today at the Boise State University in the sociology class, making the same point, is that what is the goal of education, right? You can have technical knowledge of engineering, technical knowledge of society. You can understand how society works, there's social laws, and you can manipulate them. Well, for what purpose, right? Yeah. So the educators should inspire other people, the government, everybody else, through knowledge, through superior knowledge, through power, more power by knowledge, to engage the people in proper acts of sacrifice, you know, so they can get free from the material entanglement like that. You know? Everybody's faced by old age and disease. You know Fritz Lang? He made the first science fiction movie. He was a very famous German cinematographer. So I interviewed him one time. He said, don't let people tell you that old age is good. He said, so every year you become more and more frustrated. I want to do this, but you can't, you know. Shakespeare has the changing bodies. Dehino shmin yata dehe, komaram yavananjara. Bhagavad Gita says, we go from youth to old age, to boyhood to old age. So Solomon in the Bible, he has the same thing. People realize this. So in Shakespeare, in the play As You Like It, as opposed to As It Is, right? As You Like It, you see this young man with an old gentleman in the forest, and then some person says, oh, it's very strange. And he says, yes. He says, all the world's a stage. You know this? And the men and women therein mere actors. Right? And a man in his life plays seven parts. The infant, mewling and puking. This is old English. Mewling and puking in his mother's arms. We got some of those around here somewhere. Where's Leela, right? Mewling and puking. Right. Yeah. Yeah. And then the young boy with shining morning face and satchel making it snail's pace to school. That's cool. And the youth, composing a love song describing his mistress's eyebrows, oh, you know, sighing like a furnace. Yeah, this is why Shakespeare is so powerful, you know. It's words. So then the young man with a bearded like the leopard, you know, full of strange sayings and brave oaths, even into the cannon's mouth. Vive la France, you know. Mera Bharat Mahan, hey. Like that, yeah. And the next stage of this strange drama is the justice with a good cape on and wise phrases and modern instances, right? Quoting these things like that. And then the next phase is, you know, old person, his big manly pipes now turned to a mere whistle, and his skinny shanks, right, legs, now too narrow for the wide world. And the last stage of this drama is mere oblivion. Sans means so ends. Sans eyes, sans teeth, sans everything. Like that. They're very beautiful. And I saw an illustration one time, somebody, you know, it was older book, you know, 100 years old, they had like, you know, black and white pictures to go with each one like that. It's a very, very powerful educational thing to make people realize what's happening. Is it in the temple? No, it's actually in the temple in Denver. It's Changing Bodies exhibit. You know, many of our temples have this, and it shows, you know, this whole thing like that. Pictures in here. You just ask people, where are you? And they go, oh, about here. And it wakes you right up. And then you see, well, that's a fact. I was like that, and it's just about where I am, you know? Yeah. That's why it's in the Bible. It's in Shakespeare. It's in the Bhagavad Gita. This is something to wake us up. You know, what's happening. You know, time-lapse photography. Take a picture every you know, 1 hour, once a day of flowers. Or time-lapse photography of your body. You know? Like that. Yeah? Yeah? And so, this is the whole purpose of you know, all the Vedic knowledge, you know, to inspire people. What is the goal of life? To get free from this samsara, you know, to get free from old age, disease, death, you know, these problems. You know, not to get, you know, the Japanese say there's three sacred things. Every human being has a right to the three sacred things: color television set, refrigerator, and automobile. Right? Yeah, but that's the propaganda, isn't it? If you look on the mass media, what is it telling you? You should get this, you should get that. What should you get? You should get some cools, right? Like that, smoke cools. Yeah. Or a car, right? Yeah. But you just look around. What are they actually saying? What are they actually telling me I should get? All the propaganda, you know? Maybe the kind of highest thing is like a peaceful, happy family life. In the Mormon Church, right? Very powerful organization. They have their tract. They go around and push these things under the doors, you know? And then you pick it up, it says, what's the most important organization in the world? Now, who's not going to open it? It's kind of like, you know, it's like, your family. You go, wow. Like that, you know? Yeah. And they had some commercials on television they're sponsoring in terms of very elevated family life. You know? But the Vedas also offer this program. It's called Pitri. Pitri Loka. Right? Pitri. Pitri Loka. And the Chinese culture has this. Some African cultures also. You know, and also within our culture too, it's not formalized so much, but you find it. I was watching one movie by what's his name, Robbins, famous actor. Huh? I guess so. Robin Williams. Yeah, it was What Dreams May Come. What Dreams May Come. Yeah, and it's the same thing. He dies. He's very successful. His wife and family, and their kids both die in an auto accident, and she tries to commit suicide. And he brings her back, you know, to consciousness of the family and stuff, and then he gets killed in an auto accident like that. So he goes to some place and he's there, and it's like a picture that she painted. She's an artist, very good artist. You know. And he's there, and then some guy comes and he says, "Hey, I'm your friend here to help you. And you died. This happened. That happened. You know, in another place. You know." And gradually, kind of opens up. You know, and then gradually, little by little, he meets all of his family members in different ways, like that. You know. And he meets the family dog is there. And in the end, he has to go to hell to save her because she's his soulmate. And he has to go. Nice places. Finally, he gets her, saves her, you know, and they live happily ever after with all the family. Right? The whole family is together with the dog and everything. You look at Jehovah's Witnesses magazines, they have the same thing. It shows this happy, you know, country environment with a suburban house. It's the most bizarre thing. Your family is outside having a picnic, and there's a suburban house there, and there's a black guy and a white guy and, you know, and one yellow guy, a tiger, a lion, and a lamb. And everybody's there but Jesus, right? Jesus is not there. And they're having a picnic, you know, that together with the whole family. So in this movie with Robin Williams, he asks his guide, he says, well, where's God in all this? He kind of laughs and he says, well, he's up there. And he's trying to tell us that he loves us and wondering why we don't listen. Yeah. So this is Pitriloka. It's still a material thing, you know. Live with your family for a long time and enjoy these relations, but still you're not satisfied. How do all the movies end? And they lived happily ever after. They don't show you that. Like that. No? You know, what's the most famous love story in the world? How does it end? How many people are dead? Romeo's dead. Juliet's dead. His best friend is dead. You know, her brother is dead. Huh? Huh? Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. This is the best it gets. Is that just when it's all there, you know, everybody dies before you have to live together. And Romeo, Juliet becomes, you know, was a loudmouth, complaining housewife, and Romeo becomes an alcoholic and like that. Romeo and Juliet 10 years later. You know,
a couple of paintings from Sears. And
Yeah. Family show them out. Yeah. So, this is the whole thing. What is so, you know, Wednesday we have a program at noontime with the Cantuta about what is the goal of it. Goal of education. It's the education university. This is responsibility. The educated people are supposed to inspire everybody else to engage the ordinary people in acts of sacrifice to achieve immortality. Right? Realize their immortality, you know. And they themselves shouldn't take up the administrative or the economic roles. You know? Okay, let me have some dances and some music. And the second half of the day is then specifically our Gandharva Veda presentation about here's how to do it. The dance, music, this poetry, this is a natural way to communicate to people, to most people like that, to inspire them, to touch their hearts. You know? So it should have very, very high effect. Our Manipuri troupe had that ability to give people a high experience in cultural life. Then the next day we have a presentation at the National Agricultural University and beautiful selections in the Bhagavatam about that, about ecology. There's some wonderful purports in here about how the elements are supposed to work together and cooperate and society and the demigods. And then we have natural prosperity with rain, you know, grain, silk, ivory, you know, wood, furniture, you know, all these things in abundance. So animals and man can eat grains and vegetables sumptuously to their heart's satisfaction, right? And then work hard, you know, for self-realization like that and achieve full satisfaction and complete harmony like that. All the different ecology groups agree that the number one enemy of sustainable development is greed, right? You know, Gandhi said, there's enough for every man's needs, but not enough for every man's greed, like that. And that's the problem. We're not satisfied, you know, with a simple life of self-preservation. So therefore, we have to strive for all these unnecessary things. Specifically, Prabhupada's talking about food, you know. People become so greedy and lusty, they have to kill animals. Where are you be satisfied with bread and cheese? Very satisfying diet, like that. So then Friday then the evening is a ladies' fashion show. This is Tuesday night. Then we're going to call it a gastronomic and something or other dress tour of India. You show a map and from places like that. And the Indian ladies in Peru, they have all these saris and everything else in their closets and they can't wear them there and they have all these children's clothes and so all, you know, this is the greatest opportunity on earth. Yeah. So we did it last year. It was very nice like that. Yeah. So now this year will be expanded. And then Friday, is the main program in Lima. And then the ambassador of India will come, and the chairman of the National Science Education Advisory Board for the whole country is going to inaugurate the program. They're going to host it, right? The National Science Education Advisory Board. So you can understand that kind of host immediately makes it like authentic, rational, authoritative program. And then we have to supply the content. So our idea, so the name of the title of the thing is, how classical Indian culture has great sources of inspiration for forming a strategy for the future of Peru. Because Peru is a very nice place. Everybody's preaching in different place, different environment. In Peru, there's a traditional Inca culture, and pre-Inca culture, which goes back thousands of years like that. And they were worshiping the earth, worshiping demigods. They had mystical powers. People still cannot figure out how they would made their buildings. So Sacsayhuaman, the Inca's capital, they have stones, two-story tall stones, and that's square like that, to make the walls like that. Solid stones, two stories tall, and they aren't just like square blocks. They go like this, right? One of them has. I think it's 14 points on it, like that. And the other ones fit in so close, you can't put a piece of paper in between. Okay, all you engineers, Mr. Bridge Engineer, how would you do this? How would you do this? Yeah, you see, well you could, lift it up and polish a little bit off and put it back down again. millions of slaves working for millions of years, yeah, sure. You try and get anybody to work for you that's a sociological phenomenon, a miracle, So you just can't figure it out. There's more and more things. Prabhupada was talking about Kumbhaka yoga. Kumbhak means frog, no? It means frog. So frogs can go when the water dries up, like in Australia, there'll be a lake. The water will dry up, and sometimes 2 years before it rains again, 1 year. And the frogs will stay in the mud that long, like that. Some die, but some can just sit there, lower their respiration down. One heartbeat every 6 hours is enough, like that, So this is called Kumbhaka Yoga. So Gajahanta told me he heard Prabhupada on the tape directly say this. He said, yes, the Peruvians had this art, like that. It's very interesting, yeah. It's a very mystical place. When you go there, you just feel this. It's just the culture, the music. If you've heard Peruvian music and the Andean music, that alone is a convention. This is something unbelievable. And very similar to India, like that. So they had this culture. Yeah. And when they see the Indian medical systems, all these things they see, this is the same as our systems. Then the Spanish came with their colonial culture. And Spanish had very sophisticated social culture. For example, the British, their idea was to, form complete separation with local people. Like in India, there was this whole program of complete, making sure that no British girls were floating around to become, married to Rajas or anything else like that. As soon as some girl was not, in the British community, there was a whole fund to grab them, put them on a boat, and send them back to England, like that. So there'd be no, mixture, like that. And in New Zealand, it was even more brutal. They formed a line, people with their weapons, and marched across the island and killed every human life form on the island like that. It's very famous as a so-and-so line. In America, of course, that's so gross, but he annihilated, the indigenous people in so many ways, like that. So it's more the British-German system. But the Spanish idea was to mix and keep control. I saw a very old painting one time, and it was like, okay, if your father was Spanish and your mother was Inca, then you were this caste. And they had all these different kinds of caste relationships, and everybody had their position then, So you didn't have to annihilate people. One of the most famous writers, Garcilaso de la Vega, his mother was an Inca princess, and his father was like a Spanish captain. And then, so he's writing about the history as soon as, right after the conquest, he starts writing about why it was this way and how things happened. So they have a whole literary tradition which goes from the Incas to the Spanish on down like that. Very fortunate. And so then after that, after the colonial period with all its sophistication of social relations, for example, in the house you have a servant, I mean a cook, you have a, what do you call it, a secretary, and little kids from the neighborhood come in getting paid a little bit and they help out during the daytime, just like India, you know, like that, you appreciate it like that. And the cooks don't get married, you know, secretary, they live in the house, that's their real family, they have their room, they're taking care of their whole life, you know, they know how to do this. So, Inca culture, colonial culture, then Marxist culture, right? What was the Marxist movement in Bengal called? Yeah, the Naxalite movement. So there in Peru was the Sendero Luminoso. Sendero means path, and Luminoso means illuminated, the illuminated path. It was one of the most bloodthirsty, you know, murderous groups to ever exist on the face of the earth. If one village didn't agree with them, they would come and systematically kill everybody like that. So other people would learn a lesson, you know. And a lot of car bombings and everything else, you know. So it's Marxist philosophy. We have to give up this religious ideas, spiritual ideas, a Catholic culture. Forget these things, you know, the rational new view. And so then Fujimori, Japanese president, his secret service captured their leader. You know, all these kind of things. So that kind of put them... You know, they're still there. They can't kill the leader because it would be just too violent a reaction. It would be so much reprisal. They just kept him in prison, imprisoned. You know. So finally now, I mentioned this before, Saga Fayabella and you know, Macy's and McDonald's and Colonel Sanders with the bucket in the sky. You know, they're all coming there. And they're building these big malls. And you know, it's like in India, no? They're just starting with these big malls and people are shopping. So they have all these big modern malls and just like... You know, 1 mile away is still like a, you know, like a, what do you call it, like a tent town, like that. So all these things exist simultaneously. I mentioned this before. And the president before the current president was Toledo, I forget his name. So he was a tribal guy. You know, tribal, it still exists in the Andes. The most primitive kind of tribal people still exist and integrated. When the Andes are as high as the Himalaya Mountains, they grow all kinds of potatoes, like I don't know, 1,000 different kinds of potatoes. Unbelievable. Purple corkscrew potatoes. Yeah. And so what they do is when they pick them out of the ground, they just smash them. And at nighttime, they automatically freeze dry. Right? The water evaporates and comes out because it's just so high. La Paz is 13,333 feet. When you look, Denver is the mile highest city, right? So you're looking at Denver... You know, it's 8,000 feet down below you. You know? Yeah. Cusco is the capital of the Inca Empire, and there's a tourist city. So when you come off the airplane, these tourists come off, the Red Cross is waiting with oxygen. Because it's watching everybody, just looking at them come down the stairs like that and stuff, you know. And yeah, every now and again, somebody collapses and they go over, you know. So you go inside and you're waiting for your luggage to come. And there's a sign that says, "Welcome to Cusco, capital, imperial capital of the Inca Empire. If you have hypertension medicine, use it." Yeah, don't go too far from your hotel the first day. It looks okay here, but you know, there's no air. You know, and so very you know different atmosphere like that. Yeah, I was talking about this. Yeah, Sendero Luminoso, the colonial culture. Yeah. So then all this new, you know, this new cultures. Oh yeah, so they still exist. You know, indigenous medical systems, indigenous people. They have all their cultures, their ways of doing things. Some very good and some very ignorant. For example, when the winter comes, they don't take the mud off their feet. Let the mud build up and let it dry, and so you have porcelain shoes, right? And you can walk through the snow with no problem like that because you have, you know, when the springtime comes, you just kind of break the mud off like that. Yeah. When the girls get married, they get a new dress. And then every anniversary, they put a new dress on and let the old one just stay there. So they've been married 30 years. It's like this whole thing of like rotting dresses, you know. So it's ignorance and goodness like that. You know, Ganesh is a popular deity there. And, you know. And then finally, you know, this is just, you know, modernized culture and trying to follow the North America. They're very proud because the Swiss government may be able to help them put in the first atomic reactor. You know, we're considering maybe the most hellish things that could possibly happen. But one section of the society thinks this is the greatest thing that could possibly happen. You know? And so Toledo was a tribal guy, some anthropologist, husband and wife picked him up, and he's a cute little guy. You know? back, you know, didn't have any parents, took him back to America, you know. Then he started growing up in America, they got a divorce, and so he kind of left on his own. He went to Stanford, got a PhD, came back to Peru, entered into politics, became president of the country, you know, because he had a PhD in administration. And he discovered it was a PhD in football administration. Yeah. So he started running the whole country like a football team, you know, like that, you know, so on. And then the central government wasn't doing so great under that in some ways, so a lot of the government fell down to the county managers, you know, the county administrators. They had to go on their own to try and solve their problems, you know. But it wasn't so bad because the hydroelectric power is like, 20, 30 megawatt turbines. Smaller size turbines, countywide turbines. And so that they just, they made individual contracts with some Swiss company to come in and, you know, service three counties and forget the central government, not going to take care of the whole nation. And the economy there is bizarre. If you go to any bank, there's two drawers, one for the imperial dollar and one for the national currency, soles. So they have the U.S. dollars and soles just going simultaneously. And sometimes when the economy gets really bad, then you have city money, which is this good for that one county. And the bizarre thing is, because it's a tropical climate, all the food comes right in from the farms directly. Corn, sweet pineapples, big mangoes, cotton, coffee. It's just an abundance. Big tables full of fresh herbs. And so much indigenous knowledge how to use these things like that. So still very natural. It's just, you actually can't have human life where palm trees won't grow. You've got to then start doing very demoniac things. Where palm trees will grow, human beings can live naturally like that. So, you know, Toledo, then he was caught in one act of illicit relations with one, courtesan in a hotel, and they got the front page of the paper had pictures of him in this room. And said, we're going to fire him, fire the president. But then the economy was the best it had been like in ever, right? You know, somehow or other. So, you know, you're trying to figure out, well, who are we? Maybe this is just what we are, a bunch of crazy, lusty tribal guys, you know, like that. Because he's emotional, very emotional, and like a tribal person, you know, like that. So that's why it's a very good place, you know, for coming and offering our goods, put our goods on the table here, you know. Because they have all these options. North America don't have these options. There's only one kind of government that works: democracy and capitalism. And you can't. In Bolivia, just across the border, the people elected a president. The first thing he did was nationalize the oil industry, which, you know, of course, it wasn't the pleasure of George Bush, you know. And then the guy was advertising, interviewed him, and he said, "Well, maybe you have a different idea of what democracy is from us. The people voted to do this, you know." And for you, democracy means capitalism. You know, for us, it doesn't mean that necessarily. So we want to talk about these things. You know. So a very wide open environment, you know, for discussing society. And that's what we're talking about. Srimad Bhagavatam is about society. It's not about some esoteric yoga system. That happens. That follows. Right? That's part of it. But the main thing is to understand that we're always social beings. Achinta Beda Beda Tattva. We're simultaneously individual, unique, different, and simultaneously totally just a part of society, a part of society. And the more you focus on either one of these, you'll discover the other. If you try and develop your own individual qualities, you'll discover how you're a part of society. If you try and just be a part of society, you'll discover your personal qualities. Right? Simultaneously one and different, like the leaves and the fruit of a tree. You can't separate them. Take all the leaves off and what's going to happen? No fruits. You know? Like that. Yeah? 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 So Srimad Bhagavatam is a social, right? Our yoga is a social, psychosocial process, yeah, for helping raise society's consciousness. And then finding some place. You know, Yare Deki Tare Kaha Krishna Upadesh. Wherever you go, just try and see people and enlighten them. Whatever you've learned, you try and help them. That's our marketing technique. Right? And then, so I found this place. I speak Spanish, you know, now pretty well. And I like the people there. You know, my nature is I feel very happy there. You know, ignorance and goodness is kind of my nature. Chile is more like Los Angeles. You know, get things done, results. You know, like that. Somebody said in Chile, south of Peru, if you had a conference on how to stop smoking, people would think it was a spiritual conference, like that, a spiritual thing, how to stop smoking. You know? But it's like that because they're very, you know, it has the best airlines in the whole, all of South America, many things like that. It's a very goal-oriented, you know, result, people like that. But Chile is more philosophical. You know, think about things. You know, make some feeling like that. You know? So we're doing this, and then I guess I'm trying to figure out what, so Friday then is this big presentation on how India has, you know, things to offer, because you, they're looking for a strategy, right? They can go as tribals, they can go as colonial people, they can go as Marxists, or they can go as, you know, consumer capitalism, industrialization, gizmo oriented modern world, that, or some combination. You know? So they don't know what. So we're coming along and says this is meant to enlighten people and give them a perspective. This is how to do it. You have to have a theistic society. You have to have a goal, a common cause, everybody realize it. And Srimad Bhagavatam does that scientifically and rationally. It goes through all these different avatars, incarnations, energies, expansions, right? And finally you can realize, yes, there's a person behind everything. And sense his presence, his nature, and have a relationship with him. Like that. Very practical. I'm the taste of water, I'm the fragrance of the earth, I'm the light of the sun. Right? And you can appreciate all these things in life. Right? And if you're an architect, Vastu Shastra, then you realize there has to be sunlight. Right? I can't construct buildings which have no sunlight. These big office buildings, you go inside, they have these flat ceilings with, you know, unending rows of neon tube lights, you know, and flat walls, and people are just, you know, day after day you go there, you just go nuts. You start smoking, you know, it's just like, I was in the federal building in San Francisco, and inside, and people are smoking in there. It's just like, do their job, you know. Actually, one person looked like they'd been pickled in cigarette butt juice and alcohol. It's just like they were, you know, like they're dead. It was like their skin and everything else, this person. But they were doing their work, you know, get their work done, you know, carry on my civil service job. One by, behind one person's desk, it said, if you don't think the dead live again, come back to this office building at 5 o'clock this afternoon. Right? Yeah. Civil service job, right? He knows about it. Yeah. The dead will live again. You know? Yeah. But that's, you know, what the world is becoming. You know? Yeah. And so sunlight, there has to be sunlight. The sun is an incarnation of Aniruddha. Right? And Aniruddha is the predominating deity of the mind. Therefore, without sufficient sunlight, you can't keep good mental health. That's one word here. Seattle. Yeah, one of the highest suicide rates in America. There's something like about, I guess, like 3 months out of the year, there's sunlight. We can. It's a science. At every level, you can sell these things. You know, tell people and see. And they realize that in Seattle, they have so much money for cultural programs to inspire people. Otherwise, it's just all this alcoholism and everything else. You know. Yeah. So this is the first canto. We got all the rest of these cantos here. You know? And this year, our festival, in the kind of conclusion, Saturday then, we're having a seminar. Here it is. Bharatiya Sanskriti, number 2. We're having a starting a seminar, 30-week accredited seminar, on the first 2 cantos. This one, of Srimad Bhagavatam, 1 chapter a week. You know, the internet, on that. I didn't do all this, you know, like that. And then it's enough. If you go through these first 2 cantos systematically, Papa says, right, you have to go through chapter by chapter, not jumping ahead, then you won't be the same person afterwards. You'll have this perception of reality. Your view of reality will change, you know. You won't be able to hurt the animals anymore. You realize this is a person, right? Just by hearing, right? Just by hearing regularly, systematically. In the Bible, Jesus said, let those who have ears listen. Mary and Martha. Jesus Christ was traveling with his followers all over the area, preaching. You know, and somebody said, come to my house and pass the night here. He was there having an ishtagoshti with all of his followers, talking about philosophy, who are we. The kingdom of God is like a mustard seed. You know, very nice analogies. And then Martha was in the kitchen cooking for everybody. And so she came out and Mary was out here. And she said, Master, there's a lot of people here to cook for. Please send Mary into the kitchen to help cook, like that. And Jesus laughed and said, he said, what you're doing is very good. But what Mary has chosen is better. Now, it's good doing this karma yoga, but even better is hearing and chanting. One of my friends, he's Ravi Gomatan, Madras. He said, there's this phrase, I guess, in Tamil that says, as long as there's food for the ears, don't worry about food for the tongue. Yeah, as long as you're hearing something which is satisfying you, don't worry about eating. Yeah? So that's a message in the Quran and Socrates. Everybody says this. You know, hearing, that's the best yoga. Right? Best yoga. Right? So, koi prashna hai? Any questions? Yes, sir. Hanji. Yeah, we're going to get this as soon as we get it. We get our maybe one, two, or three sites. We don't know.
We already did it once.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have to go through the first two khandhas at least 108 times before you go to God yet. No, Svayamana Krishna Padaravindayor. First thing, fix your mind, lotus feet of Krishna. That means to repeatedly recite the first two cantos. And once you've got the lotus feet of Krishna down, then you're going back to Godhead. You can follow you can go back to Godhead following the Master just by looking at his feet. It's enough to stay in the dust of his feet. Want to go higher? Okay, be his friend at that. Okay, you can do that. You can be Krishna's friend. But it's very difficult to be Krishna's friend. Yeah. The cowherd boys, they stick with Krishna through thick and thin. Right? You know, when Agasura is there, they don't, no problem. Just walk right into his mouth. You know, Krishna will save us. Yeah? Yeah. It's frightening. Agasura, big guy. This hurricane was coming out of his, it was a bad fishy smell was coming out of his stuff. But they were, you know, Krishna is our friend. Right? Yeah. And then finally becoming the gopis. It's all possible. You know, Srimad Bhagavatam. So here we're trying to organize in program here. And starting around Janmashtami, something like that. We'll have one retreat, like a weekend program, and then to get everything oriented. In one canto a week, one chapter a week. It's very practical. About 4 pages a day. You know, or you know, maybe you know, 28 pages a week, like that. And after about a internet, you know, thing, you're receiving the lessons and somebody calling up and make sure things okay. And about every 3-4 weeks, about one meeting, get together and discuss some of the things like that. Because there's so much to discuss. There's so many. You can look at it in terms of sociology, philosophy of nature, ethics, you know, epistemology, ontology. You can go through it again and again. Like that. This is my third time doing this program. First time we just did it with some Spanish devotees by internet communication. Last year we did it with a Yahoo group, and you know it was much better. And now San Marcos wants to have an accredited seminar and you'll get a certificate from San Marcos University in Oriental philosophy. You can put it on your resume. And by the way, I'm also a diplomat in Oriental philosophy from San Marcos University. Oh, very good. Yeah. So, any other? Yeah.
In the reading of the mentioned that re-spiritualization of the human society. Why re-spiritualization?
Because the whole world become materialistic.
Was it spiritual first and then became...
Yeah. Pretty much, you see that, you know, all over the world. You could take India. You know, I mean, there's so many temples and everything else and traditions, and now it's becoming, for example, in Radhakund, one Brahmin, he said, my mother, after everything was finished, the children were off to school and everything else was finished, she would do like 2 hours of puja every day, like that. My wife just sits and watches television, and she's always bugging me to leave Radhakund and go to Delhi and get a job. You know, yeah. That's what's happening in India too. This idea of, you know, economic development rather than austerities and fasting and introspection and growing tulsi and hearing the Ramayana. Ramayana Katha regularly. Yeah. So many festivals and so on naturally. There was a Vaikuntha Ekadasi, right? Yeah, before that was a whole you stayed up all night engaging in, you know, hearing Shastra scripture stories. But now, as far as I know, you stay awake all night watching movies, modern Hindi movies. You know. Mardi Gras in New Orleans. You heard about that? The Mardi Gras? It's a big drunken, riotous, lascivious festival. What does Mardi Gras mean? Mardi, lunes, martes, it means Tuesday. And gras means gross. So in the Christian culture, they fast for 40 days. Jesus Christ did this, to fasted for 40 days and 40 nights to become purified, to do his mission. So they follow the same tradition. They sacrifice something. The idea is you're supposed to do some kind of austerity. I mean, like living, you know, no grains or something like that. They would do these things, you know, in America also. And so, but the idea is that before you start, it starts on Wednesday. So on Tuesday, you have a big feast like that. So it's called Mardi Gras, Fat Tuesday, like that. Maybe it's at the end, I don't know which. But nobody knows. It was a religious festival. People have also forgotten that Christmas is also a religious festival. When I was a child, we'd go around, we'd look at all the Christmas lights, and people would decorate all their neighborhoods with all these lights, certain areas. We'd just drive around and see them all, with Jesus and Mary and the shepherds and so many. And last two or three Christmases, I've only seen one angel. Everything else is just Santa, you know, Santa Claus and snowmen. You know, it's becoming the most secular, disgusting, boring, superficial, meaningless holiday on earth. You know? We were in Disneyland going around with our money pouries, and they said, and we have a big program here on the biggest holiday of the year. I see Christmas. New Year's Eve. Oh, God, you know. You know, New Year's Eve. You know? So it's like that. The whole world's becoming just... And again, the secret, three sacred things, you know, color television, automobile, and refrigerator. You know? You think, oh, right? Indians come here, right, and look around. Oh, we're successful. My children have nice haircuts and nice clothes. And I have two cars and nice house. And, you know, I can send money home. You know? Perfection. You know? But this thing is a pinprick. Something's bothering you, especially if you're Indian. You know, this is not quite right. Yeah? Like that. Something, you know, missing like that. Yeah? Because, you know, maybe it's not true. Maybe we are just sensuous machines meant to enjoy matter. But you begin to realize, no, it's not a fact. It's, you hear these higher stories and you feel, gosh, that's the way you should live. Yeah? You just respond, you know, to these things. Drama, art, music, poetry, these avatars. Yes. Yeah. That's potential. So re-spiritualization. Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhyutanam adharmasya tadatmanam shrinajyaham paritvranaya sarunam vinashchaya chadushkitam dharmasam starpanartaya sambhamami yuge yuge. Yeah, it's happening again and again. It'll happen again. Yeah, because it's the prison, right? Right? The prison, you expect to find like good guys when you're there. So there's always, you know, coming in and talking to people and trying to get them to, you know, become fortified and change their ways and get ready to go back out in society and be, you know, be good people, right? That's the idea anyway, right? Yeah. So, yeah. Final comments, re-spiritualization of human society. Yes, what I have. Yeah. Yeah.
That's really amazing because there's so much opposition. There's one meeting was telling me today that her parents would not let her do Ekadashi.
Yeah.
Because there's a myth that if you do Ekadashi, then your in-laws will die.
Yeah. I think one thing too is India is very big. I tell people again and again, actually the ambassador of India was sitting next to me, and I said, India is not a country, it's a subcontinent. He goes, yeah, it is. It's a collection of different countries with different languages, different foods, and, you know, different myths, you know, different ideas like that. A very big, variegated place like that. I tell people, you don't have to travel when you go to India. Don't travel so much. If you travel, all you see is the inside of trains and taxi cabs, you know. You go a couple places, but just kind of sit one place. And kind of if you sit on a second-story veranda in India, and just sit up there and watch what's happening. It's a circus, you know. Isn't it? For a Westerner, yeah. We had a pile of bricks in front of our building, and this cow was going down. This bull was kind of walking after her, like, you know. And she went up one side of the bricks, and he kind of walked around, and she walked the other side. This whole thing, like, some boss with a secretary with a table in between, like that. And this whole kind of, like, he kind of, like, acted disinterested, then he would kind of walk around, and she... That was a whole little, you know, funny drama, you know. And somebody, and the people, they started building a building across the street, and we had these... This, you know, big extended family of maybe 40 people moved in, put their tents up, and ladies were cooking chapatis on the fires right there. Other guys were taking bricks up the bamboo things on their heads. You know, they didn't have machines or anything else like that. And it was amazing because the whole thing just went up like that by, you know, by manual labor, right? Rather than all these machines. And didn't need machines, right? So anyway, India's still, I mean, it's still the best culture. When we go traveling in the interior, in Vrindavan with the Brajmandal Parikrama, you see that. There's more and more, you know, cement roads and stuff's coming, you know. And before people had their, like, traditional granths or books and, you know, their different kind of traditional pundit traditions. And more those are falling apart. You know, they're not doing it. But more and more you're hearing, like, you know, Maha Mantra. And you go in, there's some small temple, you know, 700 years old at least. And they have a couple of Prabhupada's books there, like that. And you talk to the pundit, his father is sitting in the back, maybe like old person now, and he's disabled, so his son is now in charge of everything, taking care of it. And he has, you know, Brijbasi dress and like that. And you talk to him, he starts talking English to you. And, oh yeah, I went to school in Delhi, I have an electrical engineering degree from Nehru University, you know, like that, you know. But I really... decided it wasn't worth it. I really wanted to come back, and I got one of A.C. Bhaktivedanta books, Prabhupada's books, and I read it. And so Prabhupada, that was his job, to explain things in a rational, you know, way like that, you know, for the modern mind. Like that. And so it's bizarre to think that ISKCON is going to save Vrindavan, save the world. You know, we can't even save ourselves, right? You know, like that. You know, what if our community here became the social leaders of Boise, Idaho? Right? Telling everybody how to live socially, right? In peace, prosperity, and friendship with a common cause. Oh my God. Right? We can't even keep our own lives together. We're suddenly in charge of the whole state, you know? Yeah, yeah. The most bizarre thing to think it's going to happen, but it's happening. You know, Prabhupada said it's happening. You stick to the principles, chant your rounds, get up in the morning, right? Follow principles, read these books. And he said, just one by one, you know? All your personal deficiencies will be eliminated, and we'll be able to help society. You know? And maybe you won't do it in one generation, right? You know, but in two generations, you know, three generations. Yeah, but it's all individual. You know? Ultimately, everybody has to make this personal choice: if I can do this or not. You know, you can be committed to truth or not. Bhaktivedanta Thakur defines spiritual life as commitment to truth. Nothing else. Yeah, and we all know we're faced with these things. We know what we should do, but it's difficult. Right? Austerity, social austerity, physical austerity. It's, oh, you know, that's it. Yeah. So, and well, somebody else will do it. So the nature of spiritual life is no. Every cowherd boy thinks, I'm Krishna's closest friend. I don't know why he takes me as his closest friend. So many other qualified people, but he always talks to me about important things, asks my opinion, you know. So Sanat Goswami says, every cowherd boy thinks, I am Krishna's closest friend. And the next sloka, he says, by the nature of the internal potency, it's a fact. Material life doesn't provide for that, but spiritual life does. So in the end, you know, the future of the world depends upon who? Yeah, that's the spiritual world. Everybody individually has to take this choice. You know, before the battle started, Krishna said, told Arjuna, he said, okay, let's stop for a second and consider what we're talking about here, this battle. This battle is the beginning of Kali Yuga. This is the dark side of the force. This is my own evil side of God, like that, Kali Yuga. And it's going to get so bad you can't imagine, you know. And the only hope is that with your help, I can save something, you know, and when this starts, I can... save something from this catastrophe that's coming like that. So can you do it? And Arjuna said, yes, I won't fail you. So the battle started, and this happened, that happened. And then finally Arjuna came back from fighting with the Trigartas, and he came back and the whole Pandava camp was just silence, and nobody could even look at him. And then he went to their tent, and every day Abhimanyu would come out with his shoes for his father, right? And then, you know, as you can imagine this, right? You get a phone call from Oxford, and they say, we really have something unfortunate to tell you about Radhika. You go, uh-oh. Yeah, it's just Arjuna. So no, Abhimanyu doesn't come out with his shoes, and the whole camp is like depressed, you know. He knows right then what's happened, but he can't face it. So he goes inside, and there's Yudhisthira like this, and Bhima like this, and Draupadi. And he's saying, where is Abhimanyu, my son, this and that. He's almost hysterical. And then Yudhisthira comes and says, you know, because he was Chakravyuha. And then, you know, he was supposed to save him, and he couldn't do it. So Yudhisthira then says, finally, this is all my fault, and please kill me, and Arjuna's going to kill him. Kill him. And then Krishna stops him and says, no, no, that's not the solution. And Arjuna, you know, he's finished. He can't fight anymore, he can't live anymore. So Krishna takes him to one side and says, look, you know, before this all started, we talked about this. And I told you it was going to be like this, you know. And so I know what you're going through. Your heart is broken. See, but somehow or other, you know, you're the only hope. And so unless you can push it together, and somehow or other this will go on, and the whole world is lost. And the Kali Yuga will come, because it's different each time. Every time is different what happens. You know. So Arjuna, thanks to Arjuna. Thank you very much, Arjuna. He was able just to, you know, put it all aside, right? And go on. And finally, when the whole battle is over, they go to see Gandhari and, Dhritarashtra. And on the way there, Krishna tells Bhima, go to the gymnasium and get that big iron form of you that Duryodhana used to beat on. Okay. So Bhima shows up carrying this big iron statue. You know, looking at Krishna. You know. So then Dhritarashtra and Gandhari are there, depressed, everybody's dead. Then Krishna says or something, he says, we're here to see you, the battle's over now, and I'm here with Yudhisthira, Bhima, Arjuna. Then Dhritarashtra says, oh, my nephew Bhima, such a great warrior. He killed so many of our warriors, all of my sons, like that. But let me come forward now and embrace you. You know? So he starts to go forward. And Krishna goes, you know, so he pushes the iron statue, and the Dhritarashtra just feels it and grabs it and crushes it in his arms like that. And then he starts lamenting. He said, oh my God, what, you know, I rebelled against my older brother. I'm the cause of the death of my sons, and now I've killed my own brother's child like that. And Krishna says, no, it was just the iron statue. And here's the real Bhima. And he embraces him softly and, you know, says, please forgive me. And then Yudhisthira, Gandhari says, oh, my nephew Yudhisthira must be very proud now. You're emperor of the whole world, and now we're all your servants like that. So please come forward, you know. And thus Yudhisthira goes forward, and Krishna says, no. So he pays his obeisances and flat in front of her. She raises the gauze and looks, and you know the heat from her eyes burns the tips of his fingers, turn white. But she sees she's not standing in front of him, he's lying on the ground at her feet. And so then she's pacified, lowers her gauze. Yudhisthira's, you know. And they think, oh God, it's over now. And Krishna goes, no. So, and then Gandhari says, oh, and you, Krishna, and, yes, you promised you wouldn't take any weapons like that, right? But you killed more of my family members than anybody else like that. So I curse you with all my austerity that you also will die with your whole family destroyed like that before you, when you die, you know? And so Krishna said, yes, it's true, and I accept your curse. So they pacified her. He said, but you have to understand, this Kali Yuga, it destroys all the good qualities of human beings. Tamal Krishnamurti told a bunch of Indians one time, he said, your children will be very, he said, you're very nice, like that. You're very nice people. And your children will also be very nice, too, because you're nice people. But they won't be just like you. They'll be more like the people around you. And unless we build a high school and have an educational process for them, Your grandchildren will be just like the people around you. Indians are kind of going, third generation Indians will be here, will be just like everybody else, like that. Unless you take, spiritual culture seriously, like that. And so then Krishna said, I had to do all these tricks and everything else to try and save something. Even I had to cheat and bend the rules. But with the help of the Pandavas, you save something. And then Gandhari says, yes, it's a fact. And so they all, walk off together, peaceful. Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Okay, let's chant over here and take some prasadam. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Gopijana Balava Girivara Dari.
Gopijana Balava Girivara Dari.
Yashodanandana Vrajajana Ranjana.
Yashodanandana Vrajajana
Ranjana. Chamuna Tirao Vanna Chari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Gopijana Balaba Girivara Dari. Yashodanandana Vraja Janarandana.
Yashodanandana Vraja
Janarandana. Jamuna Tirao Vannachari.
Jamuna Tirao
Vannachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari.
Jaya Radha Madhava
Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Radha Madhava Astasaki ki jai, Sopapada ki jai, Gaur Hamanandiya Dibho.